Well, hope you're enjoying the show. Today I'm joined by Jerry Giordatis. Jerry, thanks for your time and welcome to Noongar Radio. It's been a while since I've seen you.
No worries. I'm happy to be here. A regular visitor next door to Cafe Cottage, but Noongar Radio is what I listen to predominantly, so it's my station.
Though I haven't seen you in person, I've seen a lot of your writings, and I was quite interested in having a chat about you in particular to one today, a media release. But just a bit about yourself, if we can, Jerry.
I'm mostly an academic, so my PhD research is in custodial systems, the penal estate effectively, and it's unfolded a lot into racism. So I've put a lot of my research into a lot of writing for most people to tap into. I've translated it into a lot of correspondence via my journalism. I'm also a journalist last 3 years, and that happened because I moved to a country town, which I've just moved back from. I've lived in Bridgetown for the last 3 years in the southwest, and mid-January I've moved back to Perth. I'm with the National Indigenous Times. They're a pretty powerful voice. They let me write unfettered. I'm with the National Indigenous Radio Service. It's a pretty powerful experience. It means that I get out to community. I've been visiting communities and country for 3 decades now, but even more so as a result of the journalism that I'm doing. But my research in general continues, and I'm an unofficial but regular visitor to 2 prisons, and usually I get in through a chaplain or superintendents and just speak to the folk.
Well, the media release that I come across from yourself is titled A Prime Ministerial Amnesty Can Release 65% of the First Nation People from Prison.
As a prison reform advocate, as someone who believes in restorative justice, and there's a lot of restorative justice specialists out there and academics, as Dr. Brian Steele, who comes straight to mind, the retributive experience, the harsh penal state, is a failed experiment. Since 1994 to 2014, we've doubled the prison population Australia-wide. We've gone from 15,000 to 31,000. In that time, First Nations people, their prison rates have skyrocketed. We don't have to belabor the stats, but I can't help going past some of the comparative global data that I've done in both my master's and PhD research, which is that First Nations adult males, Western Australia, from a racialized perspective, are the most jailed people in the world. And the data is actually quite shocking. When we think about 8,500 First Nations people in prisons, we've got to look at it this way. There's 671,000 First Nations people Australia-wide, but on any given day, 1 in 59 are in prison. That's the world's worst rate, but it gets worse for Western Australia, that champion of what I argue sometimes.
Why is that, Jerry? Why do you think that is? What's the difference between WA when we're looking at the rest of the nation?
Well, WA is the wealthiest jurisdiction in the nation. It should be doing more. That question should be actually asked of government and of our legislators. Why is it that we can be so wealthy but we can't reduce extreme poverty, that we've got the highest homelessness rates in this country, that we've got the worst of poverty, even worse than the Northern Territory? Suicide rates in the Northern Territory, they're 23 per 100,000. That's a horrific statistic. But in WA, it's actually 36 per 100,000 for First Nations people. That's 3.5 times the national rate. But our prison rate here is actually 1 in 30. 1 in 30 First Nations people are in prison. That's all of our First Nations people. WA is actually a backwater. It's premises and its thinking, it's alien nation from the rest of the country by geography has actually lent it to carrying on a lot of the what should have been outdated premises 3, 4, 5, and 6 years ago. We live in a meritocracy here. It's about succeeding by merit. It's a merit-based society. They don't necessarily believe in substantive equality. We see that in the laws that are legislated that aren't legislated in other jurisdictions. We see that with our mandatory detention, with our mandatory sentencing law, with the curfews. You know, I looked at move-on notices not long ago, and I put that story out, and our mainstream media, even though I've given it to them, haven't tapped into it. But in 2012, out of 28,000 move-on notices, 11,000 of them were issued to First Nations people, 11,000.
Yeah, very, very minor offences, hey, to receive a prison term. What should they be doing instead of chucking them in jail?
Well, there's countries that have a whole different way about going with it, with restorative justice. There's the Scandinavian countries. They've got the lowest reoffending and lowest rates in all of Europe. The reoffense rate in Europe is actually 60%. The reoffending rate for a country like Norway is actually 16%. So what is it that they're doing right? That's what we should be looking at, the positive examples. And they're not sentencing a lot of people to prison for very minor offences. They're guiding them into and committing them to educative and job skill programs, psychosocial counselling, people helping people. And where they do actually, there's a prison there called Bastoy. It's got the lowest prison guard to inmate ratio in Europe. And there's a lot of autonomy given to the prisoners, the inmates, and that grows with time. So it's a trust-building exercise. That prison, post-release, actually has near 100% non-reoffending. So restorative justice is the way we should be going, working with people, healing. What I've actually asked for here is that we've got to recognise that 65% of our First Nations prison population, 45% of the rest of the prison population are actually in there for very, very minor offences. Yeah, in WA, we've got 300 people serving time just because they can't pay fines. We've got, you know, disorderlies and various other violations, and then we've got the very minor thefts and then burglaries. But if we released all these people who are serving 6 to 12 months in one hit, they wouldn't pose a risk to society. They wouldn't pose a substantive threat to society. And I argue why an amnesty. I've said there should be a prime ministerial amnesty. I was recently travelling with Warren Mundine 3 days.
How do you feel about their ability to improve things?
I talked to Warren Mundine and the Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Nigel Scullion, over 3 days about quite a few things. The suicide crisis that we're enduring that they need to address and abate. Otherwise, it's going to get worse. It's going to go from 1 in 12 suicides each year for First Nations people of all deaths to probably 1 in 6 by 2020. It's got a genocidal nature about it. The extreme poverty is another one, and the incarceration rates. But I don't know if they can actually deliver in terms of capacity.
Now, they've been working on this for a while.
They've had 200 long? Days. They've had 200 days already since this government's incumbency. In 200 days, we've heard a lot about jobs. We've heard a lot about education. They have rolled out, you know, the mandatory demand, which is actually already there within the law for kids to attend school. There's a few issues there. It's a noble gesture to want to get everybody into school, but there's a lot of catch-up learning. There's a lot of people with very low energy levels because of the fact that they're that far behind the substance abuses. They're going to have to actually shift additional resources if they're going to be serious about not setting up a lot of people for failure. But we've also heard a lot about jobs, and this isn't a new concept, jobs and education. It's just the way they're branding it with the urgency they're putting it out. But we haven't actually seen any of these jobs eventuate. And what I'm arguing is if we're going to actually start with education, psychosocial support, jobs training, it should start on a needs basis. It should start with our people in our prisons, which, release them all, because you can't deliver this within the penal estate. You can't deliver this within prisons, because there's a lot of other social engagements, myriad experiences that have to complement jobs training, job skill, and the linkages to job opportunities, education, psychosocial support, and they can only be done outside of the penal state. I've also seen the long queues in our prisons. I've wandered around Casuarina, I've wandered around Hakea, sometimes got in trouble for breaking the line, so to speak, or whatever, right, or when I've shared muster. But, it's heartbreaking to see the low literacy levels, to see there's a reality that a lot of people are actually impoverished and uneducated, and everybody's putting up their hand to joined what little education programs I had, what little opportunities I have in prisons, but the queues are that long that there's an unmet need that will always remain majority. Mm. But if we're going to deliver education and change people's lives restoratively, don't commit them to short-term prison sentences, 6 and 12 months. Mitigate that by committing them to programs such as these that they're talking about. We've also got to see the form and content of these programs and, you know, guide them with that sort of support where people – it's part of also redemption. We actually break people more by sending them to prison. My experience of prisons, my research, my study, and my first-hand experience is that, in general, people come out of prisons worse than what they went in. worse, and that goes to the reoffending.
And what about the costs? I mean, obviously it's going to save some money, heaps of money, you know. The amount of money that's cost to keep, you know, someone inside is unbelievable.
Well, you know, it's laughable that the government often argues the corrective services budget is part of the spend on addressing Indigenous disadvantage. That's just a disgraceful indictment of their thinking. But the corrective services budget nationally is over $3 billion. And if we released, for instance, 65% of folk by amnesty, who are in there for short terms, 6 to 12 months, who are in there for very, very minor offences, and you know, put them through various other commitments externally to the penal estate, we could potentially save half the budget, $1.5 billion. If we halve the prison population, theoretically we halve the corrective services budget, but even if we, you know, diminish it by 30%, that's still $1 billion. Mm. And $1 billion could be better spent and also do as the Norwegians are doing. Work with people restoratively, work with people outside the penal estate, get them into programs and help them build their lives. But what people need, the experience also within prison can be a patronising and paternalistic, and I know that word's quite often used, but that actually is the way it comes across, often hurtfully and humiliating. But outside of prison, helping people is a whole different ball game, and you've also got the opportunity for people who are helping you to have more capacity and more time to spend with you, and also introduce you to myriad other social engagements to you know, help you along to assist psychosocially.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much for your time. You're always a full bottle and everything, and, yeah, it's amazing. And no doubt people on the inside that have just heard that will be having great discussions today. Thank you so much for your time, Jerry.
Well, thank you for the compliments. I don't know if I'm a full bottle, but I'm happy to add my voice to the conversation.
You're pretty good. You're pretty good. You're very humble.
All the people inside, all power to you, and always the best.